So I'm speaking with Mark Blakeman, Executive Director of the McKnight Center for the Performing Arts. Mark, how's it feel to be to this point?
Well, it feels incredible, actually. It's every week that I come into the construction site, I see more and more progress. We've hit some critical benchmarks recently. We're now air conditioning the building. And that means that we're transitioning into kind of the finished work aspects of construction. So we've got to control the environment inside the facility. But, you know, getting finishes going, the word finish is part of finishes. I mean, we're in that part of the construction where you can really see and get a sense for how amazing the facility is going to be.
Describe for our audience where we're standing and what we're looking out at.
So we're standing on the stage of the Performance Hall inside the McKnight Center for the Performing Arts at Oklahoma State University. This is the same stage where the New York Philharmonic will perform on Friday, October 11, 2019. That'll be our opening gala. And the stage is filled with all kinds of wonderful technology and production capabilities. It's very much like other large-scale performing arts facilities. But what we're looking out into is what we would call the audience chamber. And it has 1,134 seats. And it is half the size, or less than half the size, of what you would find in a large-scale performing arts center. And that's the beauty of the facility, is we have the ability to bring in world-class artists, but to present them in the most unique and intimate environment. You're not going to get it anywhere else. There is not another place on this planet where you can hear the New York Philharmonic perform with only 1,000 other audience members.
You know, when I was thinking through the idea of 165 members of an orchestra being on a stage, I couldn't really wrap my head around how that could actually happen until I'm standing here on this stage. Talk to me about the immense size of this platform.
Well, the stage deck is really substantial in size. The fly loft system, this is an opera house. That's the design, essentially. We have an orchestra pit. The stage house is 92 feet tall, so we have the ability to fly sets and props in and out. We have a stage diagram for the orchestra already, where we know we can get about 120 players on stage. One of the things about the orchestra pit is that's a mechanical lift. We actually can bring the lift all the way up to the stage deck. So what you're seeing right now, I can extend the stage another 12 to 15 feet and add more square footage to the stage. So part of the versatility of the facility, part of the technology that we have access to, but we have the capability to present a really wide range of performing and visual arts here at the McKnight Center.
Let's walk over to the pit. I'd like to take a look. Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. What are we looking at down
here?
Well,
I regularly refer to this as the world's largest orchestra pit. It is the largest pit that I've ever seen. It actually is in two different stages, or sections, I should say. So we can make it half the size, or this would be the full size. The half-size pit, we can accommodate 40 musicians. That's what we typically see with Broadway touring shows or smaller productions that might be coming in. We can expand the pit, and we can accommodate an 80-piece orchestra, which would be a very large pit orchestra. That's the type of orchestra that you'd see for a big opera like Elektra or something along those lines. And when the pit's not in use, it's flush with the floor of the audience chamber, and it's filled with seats. So you see multiple levels here in the pit area, and the lower level is actually storage. So there's a lift that goes down. The seats are on movable seat wagons, and they actually roll down into that storage area, and then you bring the empty lift back up to this midsection here, and that's what creates the orchestra pit.
Mark, what have been some of the biggest challenges that you anticipated and maybe didn't anticipate to get to this point?
Oh, I certainly think that because this is a startup, it comes with a different set of challenges. I've been involved in building and opening large-scale arts facilities before, but we're a completely brand new organization. You know, part of my job is to get a consistent message out into the community. That's been a lot of fun for me to be able to do that. As I meet people, they're very excited, but they don't always know what it is that they're excited about, just that there's this great sense of anticipation about the center opening, and that this will have an impact not only on Oklahoma State University and Stillwater, but for the whole state of Oklahoma. And we really think about how we position ourselves so that we are this and become an art and culture destination, and that very much is wrapped up in our programming. There's all kinds of challenges being involved with being a startup. You know, even just talking to artist agents, there's a lot of education that has to happen there. They don't know who we are. They don't know about the facility. So we've taken some special steps to be able to share that information so that we can start to secure the artists that we want to be able to present in our opening season.
As we look back out over the performance hall, I'm assuming on either side you'll have box seating?
There is box seating. We have, as I said, we have 1,100 seats in the hall. About 900 are on what we call the orchestra level or the first level. We have a mezzanine level, which are all box seats. We have 8 side boxes, 4 on each side, and then across the back we have a series of center boxes as well. And then there is a small balcony upstairs. The mezzanine, the box seats, we have approximately 100 seats. The balcony is about 100 seats, and that's how we get to our 1,100. And from the very last row of seats in the balcony to the edge of the stage is 100 feet, which is a very, very short distance from end to end. So you can imagine the kind of experience that you could have viewing and hearing a performance at the McKnight Center just because of the scale of the audience chamber and the intimacy. But I will point out, we have a very tall ceiling, so there's a lot of volume in the space, and we have to have that so that we can accommodate all of the sonic energy for acoustic purposes. So we can present large-scale orchestras because of the height and volume, but we have this great intimate space where you're going to be able to see things up close and very personal. And we also use technology to enhance that experience as well.
We're looking at a lot of concrete right now, Mark. I'm assuming there are just an amazing number of decisions that have to be made about color schemes, chairs, lighting, acoustics, as you mentioned. Talk to me a little bit about it.
It's a really intricate, complicated facility. I tell people regularly, the McKnight Center project is much more like building a hospital or a research facility, and not so much like building a classroom or office space. What we're striving to do is create the optimum listening environment for acoustic music. And when you do that, when that's your primary driver, then every aspect of the facility becomes a decision toward that end goal. So even the type of fabric that's on the chair backs is evaluated by our acousticians. Color scheme evokes psychoacoustic properties. Certain colors are really warm, certain colors are very cool. All of those things, and of course the mechanical aspects, so noise thresholds for air handlers, the duct work is all lined with sound absorbing material. I mean, there's a lot of detail that goes into a building like this, and so I tell people this is a purpose-built facility. It has a very specific reason that it's coming into existence, and we're really working to create that optimum environment for everybody that attends performances here.
And are all of these myriad decisions already made? Are some adjusted as you go along, as you run into certain challenges during the construction phase?
Thank goodness, most of the decisions have been made at this point. I won't say we're in the home stretch of construction, but we're certainly nearing that point. And we can't change course too much at this time. One thing that I do anticipate is because acoustics are so central to the design of the facility, we'll go through a process with our acousticians where we will test drive the facility. So we will test drive the recital hall, we will test drive the performance hall, and we will actually bring in live performers on stage. Very often the acousticians will specify certain music that they want to hear, so they can scale the music to hear different things. We will probably attempt to fill the house up with an invitation-only audience, because when the house is full, it will behave differently, sonically, acoustically, than it would if it were empty. So we'll test drive it, the acousticians will come in, they'll put in metering equipment, and they'll evaluate how the room is behaving. And then based on that, we may actually make some small modifications or adjustments. We call that, we tune the hall. That's what we're talking about, is there'll be a process where we'll tune the hall.
Is that, that must be paint going up back there, or primer, I guess.
No, yeah, we're painting it back there.
Is that the finish?
It might be the first coat. I think there might be another coat, I don't know.
This is the Marilyn and Carl Thoma Grand Atrium. It's one of the lobby areas of the McKnight Center. It's the public space where audience members would be mingling, enjoying a beverage before a concert. It's where our central box office is located, so people that want to buy tickets that would want to come see us to do that instead of doing it online would come to our box office here. It's also the part of the facility that connects to our outdoor plaza, which is this amazing green space located just to the west of the center. We have huge sliding glass doors that open up so we can move a lot of people in between that outdoor space and the interior of the center. And the plaza has a very large LED wall, 32-foot LED wall, and a permanently installed outdoor line array system with delay towers so that we can sequence the audio, and we'll be able to take content performances from the interior of the facility and then put them out in the plaza so we can, when we're sold out, we can share those experiences with the community. The other thing that's really great, I mean, we're focused very much on just providing the best experience that we can for everyone that visits the facility. We are connected to a parking garage that has 700 spaces in it. There are entry points on two levels. When we go on sale with tickets, you'll be able to buy a parking pass online with your tickets, put that in your shopping cart, get that on your phone, or do print-at-home tickets. You'll be able to park in that garage, come straight into the facility. In our second year, we anticipate opening a dining space for pre-concert dining. So you could arrive early, come to dinner before a concert. If you happen to be a donor to the McKnight Center during intermission, you can spend time up in our donor lounge, which is located on the mezzanine level upstairs, and you'd enjoy complimentary beverages and a dessert and hors d'oeuvre. So we're really excited to be able to provide a premium experience to everybody that comes into the center.
And as unique as this space is, there are some elements, architectural elements, of the overall OSU experience. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's an architectural language that exists on campus, and so there are aspects of the McKnight Center, although it looks very different, it's a contemporary design. The brickwork in particular ties in to the campus architecture. The other thing that I think is kind of neat is that the center faces toward campus. So it's welcoming everybody from OSU to come into the facility, which I think is a wonderful orientation for the center.
And glass in this space on the east and north sides, but not the west side. That's pretty smart.
Well, there was originally glass programmed on the west side. We started a conversation about, okay, we know that's going to be problematic. How do we deal with it? Is that shades that are mechanical? Is that scrim that gets rolled out? And we eventually decided to take the glass out, the upper glass. The lower sections will still be glass, so we'll get some nice natural light from the west, but I think we'll be able to maintain the temperature, keep everybody comfortable inside the center.
And aesthetically, on the interior of this particular space, will it carry out the same color schemes as the performance hall?
Different the different areas of the facility have a different color palette to them. Certainly, they're complementary to one another. All of the finishes in the facility are really high quality, high durability, but very elegant, especially in our donor lounge upstairs. The main lobby, the Toma Grand Atrium, will have seating areas where you'll be able to sit. We'll be able to serve drinks in this area. Just really nice finishes. There's a really great architectural feature in the lobby area, which is hard. It's hard to articulate, but there are there's framing coming down from the ceiling, and there's three rings that connect from the ceiling to the interior wall of the lobby area, and each one is lit independently. And they actually, we can do color changes on the lighting scheme for those three different rings. And I believe it will be really the iconic architectural element of the facility. These three layers are covered in a wonderful wood veneer, so it's a very warm sense, really warms up the space. Being able to do that lighting, I think, will be very dynamic as well.
So we're at the back of house now, Mark. Yes. Tell us where we're at. Right.
So back of house would be support spaces for performances, and we're standing in the artist lounge. We're kind of nestled in between a series of small, medium, and large dressing rooms, and then production and storage areas. But we're really fortunate to have an incredible back of house. We've talked a lot about the intimacy of the performance hall in particular, but from a production standpoint, we can accommodate huge tour productions here. So we've got all the spaces that we need for tour managers. We have a laundry facility. We have a series of dressing rooms from single and double occupancy all the way up to men's and women's chorus changing rooms that we can accommodate 30 people in each of those. Storage, of course, for lighting instruments and audio visual and technical equipment and all those kinds of things. Great loading dock. You know, the production people, they talk in terms of the push from the dock to the stage, and we just have one corridor, no turns, goes right into the back of the stage for the performance hall. So it should be a really great facility in terms of production and the capabilities that we have. This lounge, the artist lounge, is where artists would hang out, relax before performances, maybe between a sound check and the start of a show. It might be the place where, you know, we do bring in meals for artists and those kinds of things. So just a great place for them to relax and feel welcome and feel at home while they're at the McKnight Center.
And I know you've been in venues large and small. Do you run into situations where not every back of house is equal to its performance space?
That is an excellent question. Very often what I see is all the dollars go into the front of house experience, which makes sense. But then when you get into the difficulties of what they might call value engineering in a project like this, you start evaluating potential cuts, and a lot of times you see those in the back of house area. So these spaces shrink down, or the finishes are reduced. I've been in many concert halls for major symphony orchestras around the country, and it's just bare concrete wall, you know, block walls and bare concrete floors, and the bass players are putting their basses in lockers that have plywood, you know, doors on them, and so that's not uncommon. The dressing rooms in particular are really very nice here. We've got, of course, showers in all of them, but they've been putting tile work in, and they're absolutely gorgeous. I mean, we will be able to give people a great experience, and giving our artists, our visiting artists, a great experience when they're here is really critical to our success. Having opened another facility, I saw firsthand how world-class artists would take that experience, and when they leave that facility, they go to the next place that they're performing. They might be leaving Stillwater and then going to London or Hong Kong or to New York. And if we give them a great experience, if they feel welcome and we give them a warm reception. They have a great performance here with a enthusiastic audience. They'll take that and they'll share it. And this is such a niche field, and everybody's connected in such a way that over time we really start to cultivate this awareness among great artists across the globe. And the ideal outcome would be that artists would start coming to us and agents would start coming to us and saying, you know, so-and-so would really like to perform at the McKnight Center. And that's what we're working toward.
The McKnight Center's back of house will eventually be the connecting point to the new School of Music. Talk to me about that connection. Sure. And how that's going to work.
So there's actually a public corridor that will connect the two spaces. There'll be a wall with double doors that separate the two. But on the south end of the McKnight Center is where the Greenwood School of Music will be located. They'll start construction relatively soon. It won't open, I don't think, until probably the second season of the McKnight Center. But what it does is it creates this incredible sense of partnership, helps foster that. We already have a great partnership with the Greenwood School of Music, but because we'll be neighbors, the university students will have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of working with our visiting artists. And what we're doing is that as we talk with artists about performing at the McKnight Center, simultaneously we talk to them about creating learning opportunities for the students. So our goal is to have every artist that performs in our first season also to be teaching on campus. And that is relatively unique. That's fairly ambitious too. But I think that it is part and parcel to the work that we're doing at the McKnight Center. We've already started that. We started it with our Chamber Music Festival last spring, where we had visiting artists from across the country in Stillwater for a week, and they all taught for our university students.
This is a massive undertaking, and I know it's not your first in your line of work, but what's been keeping you up at night?
Gosh, so many things. There's just a myriad, there's all kinds of details. You know, there's only so much of me to go around. I was telling somebody, you know, how crazy my schedule has become. I think that there's just a lot more details to think about than a handful of people can even really comprehend. I've brought in some support from colleagues around the country that have been very instrumental in helping me get our first season lined up, making sure that the organization has the proper foundation so that we can launch our season. A very good friend of mine and colleague that lives in Nashville is helping do our artistic planning, and he and I work together at an orchestra for several years. I have an arts marketer who's based in Manhattan, and he comes to Stillwater every other week to help us get all of our marketing efforts and campaigns in proper order so that we can launch. So it takes a lot of people. Certainly staffing is one of the critical issues, and moving as fast as I can on that will help us help me get a good team assembled, get us on the same page so that we can really maximize our efforts.
So with a year to go, I'm assuming we'll see most of the changes are going to happen inside, but just kind of take us through between now and the opening and what's on tap.
Well, from the outside, it might look like there's not a lot happening, but our goal for being substantially complete is around April of next year. So that's really not that much time. The work will be interior work predominantly, as you mentioned. Mostly finish work. There's a lot of technology in the facility, LED walls inside the performance hall as well as the one in the outdoor plaza. We have a very robust, high-definition video mapping system in the performance hall where we can do set design with projection. We can run 8 projectors simultaneously. All 3 of the performance spaces, the recital hall, performance hall, and the outdoor plaza, are equipped with robotic high-def cameras so we can share content throughout the facility. So there's a lot of detail work to be done, a lot of technology to be installed. So while the construction team is doing that, then I'm assembling my team so that we can kind of walk side by side through that process so that when we get to the point of substantial completion, when we have that occupancy permit, the green light to come into the building, that we've kind of got a leg up on understanding all the nooks and crannies and capabilities of the facility, and we try to expedite the learning process, the learning curve, so that when we're ready to open in October of 2019, that the McKnight Center team has a full grasp on how to make this facility operate at its maximum capabilities.
What did I miss that you'd like to add today?
Well, we're excited to be talking about this one-year countdown. Of course, we've been aimed toward the October 11 performance in 2019 with the New York Philharmonic. We will do a season announcement in early 2019. So for people that are interested in learning more about the center, if you want to connect with us, you can go to our website, mcknightcenter.org. You can hit the connect button, and there's a series of check boxes. You can tell us if you want ticket information, if you might want to be a volunteer, if you might want to help support the center, you can share that information with us. The other thing I want to be sure to mention is that we're still a year out, but we're already producing concerts. We started last spring, and we have a series of activities that will be rolling out this year that are really exciting. And this is an opportunity for us to share with the community kind of a taste of what's to come. And the first thing is November 1 of this year, 2018, Carter Bray, who's the principal cello with the New York Philharmonic, he'll be performing at the Saratine Center that evening with the OSU Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Dr. Thomas Dickey. Schumann Cello Concerto, he'll be performing, and he'll be teaching while he's on campus. We'll have our second year of our Chamber Music Festival. Anne-Marie McDermott, our artistic director, will be coming back. That starts February 25, and we have a series of soirees or house concerts. We'll be back in Tulsa, Oklahoma City, of course Stillwater, and we're going to go to Dallas this year, and she's put together another incredible array of musicians from across the country that'll be here for a week-long residency, youth concerts for the Stillwater Public Schools, a free community concert. And then in April 18 of 2019, it's a lot of dates, Chris Martin, who's the principal trumpet of the New York Philharmonic, will be in Stillwater. He'll be performing with the OSU Wind Ensemble under the direction of Dr. Joe Missel, and he'll be teaching our trumpet studio. He'll be coaching brass ensembles as well, and that's a really great matchup because our trumpet studio at OSU is phenomenal. I'm a trumpet player. It's no coincidence that I'm bringing the principal trumpet of the New York Phil in before we open the center. But you know, we have such an incredible, talented group of young musicians in the trumpet studio under Dr. Ryan Gardner's tutelage, and to be able to learn from the principal trumpet of the New York Philharmonic, the oldest orchestra in the United States. I mean, that's an incredible experience. And we invite all you to check out all of these things by visiting our website, mcknightcenter.org.